Welcome to the Week in IndyCar on the Marshall Pruitt Podcast, presented by Cooper Tires and supported, thankfully, by PNC Bank. We've got a bit of a shorter episode here with young Colton Herta, currently second in the Indy Lights Championship. I think we're going to see him in IndyCar next year. Fairly confident that is going to take place, and really thankful to have him on the week after his Andretti Autosport teammate and championship leader Pato O'Ward came on. So, fun for me as a longtime member of the, what we call today, the Mazda Road to Indy, as someone who spent so many years of my career working on that ladder and being a part of Indy Lights for a really long time on the crew side. I know this is the week in IndyCar, and we've just had now two consecutive Indy Lights drivers on, but fairly confident in saying we're going to see these two animals becoming stars in IndyCar and doing great things for years to come. So I hope you enjoy young Colton here. Also, I have a separate podcast because I just thought it deserved being broken out. Captured it last night with our man Robin Miller. Silly season update. And we have written a lot over the past, 2 months maybe. Cluing into Dixon, looking at McLaren and Andretti, and Andretti and Harding and them trying to do things. So we've written a lot about it. There's also a lot of things that honestly, they fit better in a conversation. So rather than not use them in the written stuff we've done, Robin and I said, well, let's just have a chat because he and I talk about these things at least once a day, if not more. So there might be a couple nuggets in there. Might be some things you enjoy. Rather than bundle that here into the week in IndyCar, figure that will just deserve a little place of its own. So might want to check that out. That's going to be going up right after this episode goes up. And yeah, I mean, just filed another piece moments ago about Fernando Alonso expected to test at the beginning of September. Lots of movement there. I think we spoke about this in the silly season piece as well with Robin, that we're both fairly well convinced not only is the Andretti-McLaren thing happening, but also that they are going to essentially take over what is Harding Racing, take over that building, and maybe use some of what and who is there, but for the most part, have that become their new home and base of operations. So there's a lot going on. I put up a story this morning after speaking with Bobby Rahal, who did confirm the rumors I'd been hearing about wanting to test and possibly have Colin Brown race. Looks like the time has run out for Colin to do the final race of the year at Sonoma, but Bob did express his interest in wanting to test him, and also Felipe Nasr from the Action Express IMSA prototype team as well. Pretty cool stuff there for me, at least knowing that I cover both IndyCar and sports cars full-time, to see that Bob is looking for talent, just like Schmidt-Peterson Motorsports did with Robert Wickens, outside of the traditional venue. So hope that all of that goes well. As I mentioned at the outset, we are super thankful to have not only Cooper Tire on board for the entire year, but also to have PNC joining on for the next couple of months. PNC is proud to sponsor Scott Dixon, driver of the number 9 car for Chip Ganassi Racing. Everyone tunes in on race day, but so much of the race is determined off camera during the work put in throughout the week, month, and year. From the gym to the practice track, Scott Dixon and the team take small steps every day to get closer to victory lane. Copyright 2018, the PNC Financial Services Group Incorporated. All rights reserved. PNC Bank, National Association, member FDIC. Okay, that's about it for our little cold open this week. Hope you enjoy Colton. He's a fun kid. There is a great answer coming up to the question of if he and his dad were fighting for the win at Indianapolis and coming out of the final corner, would he bump his old man if he was behind him to win? I love it. Love the kid. Love that. And we really are blessed to have a couple of great talents, truly great talents, preparing to move up to IndyCar. So hope you enjoy Colton. Really good kid. You can tell his mom and dad have done a heck of a job raising him. And what else? I think I might have mentioned starting work on a new MarshallPruittPodcast.com site that will house every podcast we've ever posted, and try and break them down into sections as well. So it's really easy if you want to listen to in-car audio, listen to the legends and heroes speak, to get every episode we've posted of the Week in IndyCar, Week in Sports Cars, you name it. A couple months away from that happening. It'll take a little while to get that done, but that is at least in motion. And then I'm actually going to miss the next two IndyCar races because I'm going to be on vintage racing duty for Racer Magazine here in Monterey. So I'm not complaining. Going to Monterey and spending time with vintage cars, that's always an awesome thing. But we'll look forward to whatever comes out of Pocono this weekend, because I anticipate the championship is not going to look the same up front by the time it's over. All right, off we go with Colton Herta, Week in IndyCar, the Marshall Pruitt Podcast, presented by Cooper Tires, supported by PNC Bank. How you doing, my man?
Good. I hope everyone's doing well. I hope you're doing well, Marshall.
I am. So you've got some travel to do here shortly, so unfortunately, we're not going to be able to do a 9-hour marathon Week in IndyCar podcast. But with that said, let's think about getting into questions sooner than later, because you have had more than 30 people send in questions for you here. Before we get to that, Colton, right, let's talk about testing an IndyCar for the very first time with the Harding Racing team. I think one of the better quotes I read was you saying, "It wasn't so much the power that struck me, it was hitting those big carbon brakes for the first time and almost smacking your face off the bottom of the car." What were some of the sensations of getting to finally test an IndyCar?
Yeah, like you said, the brakes was the biggest thing. It was quite comparable to the lights car, actually. The power didn't feel that much more. I think it's probably like 15, 20 miles an hour more, which isn't a big step, but the biggest thing was the brakes. Like I said, when I hit him, here's the first thing, is carbon brakes. The only other car that I've driven with carbon brakes is the M8 and the Formula E car.
Gotcha. Big BMW M8 and Formula E. Wow. Two different worlds there.
Yeah, which I don't think the Formula E car really needs carbon brakes. But that's another note. So, and it was quite different than those cars. Whereas the bike didn't come in until the first flying lap. So it took a lap to get up to 10th, and then you go into a big brake zone and you're not expecting that bite. And so I slammed on the brakes and face went straight to the ground.
Tell me about the rest of the experience in testing the car, Colton. It sounds like, and tell me if this is correct, it sounds like it wasn't the big, "Oh my gosh, this is crazy, it's going to take 20 years for me to wrap my head around this." It sounds like I'm not saying you're going to be winning your first IndyCar race, but it sounds like it fit into what you expected, and you performed as expected instead of going away thinking, "Ooh, wow, this is a huge jump."
I thought it was going to be quite a bit bigger. And before I got in the car, Little Al, he told me what his dad told him when he tested an IndyCar. He said, "It's just another race car." And that couldn't have been more true. Still has four wheels, still has an engine, and it's quicker, but you can, after like the first run, second run, I was pretty much comfortable with the car to where I could tell what was going on and I could give good feedback, and then we can start working on the run plan for the rest of the day.
And the other thing I love about that is you have driven race cars. I mean, obviously you're young, but you've driven race cars since you were able. And for you, climbing into an IndyCar was something that just fit in a line of progression, getting you towards your ultimate goal. It's also fun to think that if the average person, having not gone through that progression, climbed into an IndyCar for the first time at Portland, they'd be screaming and crying the first time they whistled down the straight at full speed, because it's that jarring of a thing. But I just love to hear when a young driver's like, "Yeah, okay, yeah, I can do this. It's not as crazy as I thought."
I was actually really surprised. I was expecting quite a big jump, and it really wasn't. So I think everybody that's on the Mazda rep to Indy did a great job. I think IndyCar is doing a good job implementing new young drivers too.
So we obviously have a big moment right now. Maybe it's been going on all summer long, but we definitely have a big moment now on the silly season side of things. And I know we can't get too heavily into who you're driving for next year and tell us all the plans, because a lot of that is still being discussed. But just give me your thoughts.
As I'd love to.
Yeah, give me your thoughts about Fernando Alonso's retirement, and in theory, opening up the door that if he wanted to, at least, IndyCar could be something that he does next year, and how that and Scott Dixon deciding to go back to Ganassi. Seems like even though we've had one door close, another one may be open, there's still a lot of things that aren't exactly summed up and buttoned up for next year. Just give me some thoughts on that, because you're kind of in that mix too.
Yeah, I think it's great for the sport if he does. I think it's even good for F1 to show, you know, what he has over here and to prove himself over here. I know a lot of European people think that IndyCar is a step down, but I don't believe that at all. I think he's going to be a lot happier if he does come over. He's going to be able to race. And yeah, at the end of the day, he wants to race, and I think this is a great place for him to do it. It'd be it would be amazing for IndyCar.
Let's mosey on to questions and use the rest of our time to get through as many as we can. One thing we do at the start of Q&A each week on the Week in IndyCar, Colton, is we look back to my favorite question from the previous week, and our friends at Toronto Motorsports send them a t-shirt. And I really enjoyed John Sable's question, which he posed to Pato, asking about the Mexico tourism branding on his car and whether that was a new development, how that might help him get to IndyCar. So, John, send me a DM here, give me a shirt size, and we will get you all sorted out, courtesy of our friends at TorontoMotorsports.com. And let's jump in to some Q&A. I don't know if you're used to doing a rapid-fire Q&A here, my man, but it's also early. It's 8 o'clock in the morning, so I don't know if you're a coffee drinker or what, but hopefully I've tried to get my brain running on a couple of cylinders at least. Let's see. Let's start off with Adam Smith, who says, "Hey, Colton, can you give us a favorite trackside memory you have from growing up watching your dad race, or maybe one that you have from coming up through your own racing career?"
I mean, the main one that comes to goal isn't from his racing career. It's from when Dan won the 500.
Ooh.
And from his racing career, it's probably his Michigan win. I was there for his last IndyCar win.
That's pretty awesome. So Simon Roffey asks, "What was it like racing with your dad as a teammate at the 25 Hours of Thunder Hill?" And what I love about this question, Colton, is at the time, your dad was saying, yeah, all he wanted to do was just beat me and be the fastest guy in the car. But I'm curious now, with a year or two of distance from when that happened, what was it like racing with your old man?
Oh, yeah. It's awesome. And, it was super cool. It was a different experience. I loved every bit of it. I hope we can do it again. I think we're working on something and that we can do in the off season that hopefully we can announce soon. But yeah, that would be awesome if we got that done. It was a cool experience. It's a different experience from what I've had, so I enjoyed it.
I'm thinking a 24 Hours of Lemons race. That should be the next thing for you and your dad. Let's see. Any tracks? This comes in from Chris Allen. Any tracks that your dad raced on or that your dad loved and has told you about that you'd like to see return to the IndyCar calendar?
Well, I would have said Laguna Seca in Portland, but that has already happened. So
awesome.
I know he always loved Michigan. He's a bit biased there because all his family lives there, and that's where he grew up. He always loved Michigan. Richmond would be the main track.
Ooh, well, we're still waiting to find out whether that is indeed going to return this year or next or at all, but continue to hear things that are somewhat encouraging. Let's move on to Jordan Darwin. He says, Colton, name your favorite track you've raced on in North America and your favorite European track.
In North America, probably Mid-Ohio.
Good man.
That's one of my favorite ones. Road America is always a close second as well. That track's awesome. And in Europe, my favorite track was Red Bull Ring when I was racing up there. I raced there in Formula 3. And Silverstone was also a great track.
Brilliant. Let's see. Now, this one actually had what I ask folks to do when they send in questions. I ask everyone to, on Facebook here, to like the ones that they want answered among the first. And this one got the most likes. This comes in from Daniel Kincaid. And he says, Colton, how do you prefer your tacos? Hard versus soft, corn versus flour, beef, chicken or fish, cheese, sauces and other condiments. I know it's early in the morning, and I don't know if a breakfast taco... I don't think we're talking breakfast tacos, but what is the perfect Colton Herta victory taco?
Ooh, it's a tough one. It can't just be from, like, Taco Bell. It has to be from a nice restaurant. But I kind of... It's surprising. I like my tacos quite plain, so probably, like, some salsa with cheese and probably some carnitas, maybe.
That's not a bad thing at all. Are you a soft shell, a hard shell guy?
Soft shell.
Okay.
Flour.
I might go soft and corn, but I can't really argue with that. Let's see, where should we go next? Jordan Darwin sent in a couple of great questions, so we'll stick with a few from him. He says, Colton, how much of a guaranteed season do you need to make the jump from Indy Lights to IndyCar in 2019? And he says, where is the break-even where another year in lights might make sense? And I guess that maybe raises a bigger question, Colton. Whether you win the championship or not, do you think you're going to close the season at Portland and say, I've gotten all there is to get out of Indy Lights, it's definitely time to go to IndyCar? Or is there still maybe a window to stay one more year?
Yeah, I mean, I think if I couldn't get a full season in IndyCar, I would probably, do a few races and do what I can. But I don't really see Ubisoft doing another year of Indy Lights. I would probably just try and get as many races in as I can in IndyCar.
You know, I'm glad to hear that, because of all the records that Juan Piedrahita has come up with, and this might be the only one, is as someone who has competed in more than 100 Mazda Road to Indy races, I really wouldn't want to see you trying to take aim at that record. So I'm all good with whatever it is you're doing next year in IndyCar, full-time, part-time, you name it. Andrew C. says, Colton, your first name is rather unique. He says, I've met Colts before, but not a Colton. He said, have you ever met someone else named Colton?
Yeah, I've actually met quite a few people. One of my brother's friends' names is Colton. There's somebody at the racetrack named Colton. I can't remember who it was. Somebody that worked for IndyCar, their kid was Colton.
Huh.
And I used to play with him all the time when I was younger at the racetrack.
Interesting. I would have thought the answer would have been no. I meet one or two marshals a year, and my name isn't that unique. Your name is certainly unique, so. But how interesting. Let's see, we got a question here from me from Patrick McTighe. Thank you for telling me how to correctly pronounce your last name, Patrick, by the way. It says, Marshall, a quick non-Colton question for you. How long is Ed Jones' contract with Ganassi? Do you think they'll try to reacquire Brendan Hartley? Or perhaps try to bring in a certain Spanish fellow who just put in his 2 months' notice. Patrick, I don't know the answer on the contract length with Ganassi. I keep asking Chip to send me all his driver contracts, but he says no. My guess is it was a 1 year with a team option for the second, purely a guess. And based on my interview with Chip that went up a day or two ago about now that they have the number 9 car and Dixon sorted, what's your approach to locking in the 10, or what might happen there? And Chip wasn't exactly flowery in saying, oh, yeah, oh, this is a done deal. Ed will be back. I've heard, Colton, that Dixie has a new teammate coming, and that's already a done deal. Yeah, I just need to make a few calls today and hopefully tomorrow to see if I can get some folks to tell me some good lies about how it isn't happening so I can at least use those as good denials. As for Brendan Hartley, Patrick, I think that ship might have set sail. If some of the other drivers they wanted weren't available, maybe that would have been a road to go back to. But the Fernando Alonso to Ganassi thing, while I love that, Colton, that would be amazing. Fernando Alonso and Scott Dixon together? I mean, that'd almost be unfair. That thing has blown up as a possibility on the old internets in the last 24 hours. From everything I know, Patrick, it's not happening. Fun to talk about, but not happening. Let's see. Graham Wilson has a question for you. And I know you've answered this before, but this will be your first time answering it on the podcast here. What do you feel you learned by going to Europe in your formative years over staying in North America? And he said, with Joseph Newgarden, Connor Daly, and yourself having spent time in Europe, is it something that's now imperative for a young U.S. driver to do?
Yeah, I loved my time in Europe. I think if I could do it over, I would do it the same way. It was super important for me to get over there. I was young at the time. I moved over there. I was 14. I lived there for about 2.5 years. And yeah, it grew me as a person, for sure. Having to learn to cook and clean and do everything on my own. So it was tough. The first week away from home was tough, just like any time. And then I got used to it, but yeah, it really built me up as a person, because I had to find my way to the workshop on my own. I had to take buses and trains in a foreign country, and I wouldn't go home for 3 or 4 months. So, yeah, and it was so cool to be over there too. So from a racing point of view, my year in F4, I did 25 preseason test days. So I was literally in the car 2 times a week.
Yeah, yeah.
At least.
Wow.
So, and then we did 30 races that year too. 10 race weekends, 3 weekends. So it just built up everything in my race database a lot. You know, my racecraft got better, my qualifying got better, just my overall speed was better. And that's just from consistently being in the car. And that's kind of what you need when you're young, is you just need repetition so it sticks in your mind.
No, that's brilliant. And other than karting, where, you know, you can be in a kart and competing, testing, racing seemingly every day, once you start stepping up into car racing in North America, I can't really think of an open wheel series, maybe other than Skip Barber, but again, that's kind of towards the bottom of the ladder, where you could be in a car as often as you were. So just the amount of miles, the amount of decision making scenarios, how to pass, when to pass, making mistakes and learning from them. It just sounds like you had such a high frequency of that young and very early on, that's one of the reasons we're looking at you now and saying, man, this kid's polished, very polished already. Let's see, we've got a question here from Justin Brockwell. He says, if the weather pattern out west fails to change by the end of the month, and you still have fires burning across the region, would IndyCar consider scrapping the Portland weekend if air quality were to be of concern? I think, Justin, that would be more of a local decision made by the city, made by whichever governing boards would determine that. I, at least here in Northern California, we had a little bit of the fire and smoky carryover through the air here, but it hasn't been really a big thing. I don't know about for you in Southern California, Colton, but I don't think this is going to be an issue, Justin. I really don't. If the races were this weekend or last weekend, maybe it would have been a bigger concern, but I don't think it is or will be going forward. All right, we've got one here from Daniel Davidson that I really like. And he says, Colton, last week Pato stated that he liked the Indy Lights rules, would like them to be the same as IndyCar. specifically talking about push to pass, for example, and the leading car or the leader not having the ability to use push to pass in Indy Lights and would like to see that carry over to IndyCar. Daniel's curious if you share his thoughts and if you would like, in general, to have Indy Lights rules aligned completely with IndyCar, so whatever you're having to do on the road to Indy, there are essentially no changes in practices or policies once you get to IndyCar.
Yeah, I think I agree. So he said that he likes push to pass how it is in Indy Lights, and he wants to be that way in IndyCar.
Yeah, I believe so, and I could be completely wrong, but or actually, I think it might be the other way around. I think he might have said...
Yeah, I think it's the other way around, because he said a few times how it is, but...
I'm going to take a bigger sip of coffee while you answer, by the way, so sorry. But yeah, I think the other way around.
Yeah, I kind of disagree with that view. So the push to pass is quite big in the Indy Lights car, and it's a lot smaller of a jump in the Indy car, so I think it would be okay if we had how it was in Indy Lights for the leading car, if you're not within whatever time gap that they deem is okay, second and a half, then you can't use the push to pass. It's a bit more difficult now that you can turn it on and off, and it's not a certain amount of time. I think if you were to do that, you'd have to change it to maybe 10 seconds of push to pass or 5 seconds of push to pass, and you'd have to have a certain amount of pushes.
10-4. Thank you for saving me here with my mental difficulties in the morning. Let's see, where should we go next? The thing I always appreciate each week, Colton, is we get so many great questions from folks for our guests, so sometimes it's just a case of having to pick through lots of awesome.
You don't usually get to answer fans' questions, so it's cool.
Yeah, well, that's, I have to admit, that's the thing that I enjoy most about the weekly IndyCar and sports car shows that I do, is just, you know, we'll talk about whatever the news of the day is, things that we might analyze deeper than whatever we've done with a written word. But for the most part, it's just opening up the door and letting fans, you know, connect with whomever more than that 20 seconds or 30 seconds they'd get at an autograph session or whatever. So, Jerry Sudduth. Hello, Jerry. Met Jerry at Mid-Ohio. Actually met him once before that, but he sends in great questions, and I love this one. He says, Colton, is there a particular car of your dad's you'd like to drive? And I assume he means IndyCar, because, you know, I don't know if your dad has, like, Lamborghinis tucked away in the garage at home, but...
Yeah, no, we don't have any of those.
You guys are way too practical for that. One of the things I appreciate about the Herta family, there's no, like, stupid... Your dad never had a baller phase, I guess is what I'm saying. No big gold chains and rockin' Gucci shoes or whatever, so...
I think he bought a Viper once.
Yes, he did admit to that.
Like, 2 years.
And that is so...
This is stupid.
It's so your dad, too. It wasn't, again, a Ferrari. It was a Viper. Of course it's a Viper. But any cars from your dad's pretty awesome racing history, sports cars and Indy cars, even had an F1 test, where you're like, okay, give me a day in that sucker.
Yeah, that's easy to say. It's obviously the Minardi. But I think it'd be quite cool to drive the Panos prototype.
If I didn't like you already, I just fell in love with you even more. Thank you for saying that. The Batmobile. Oh, my goodness. Great choice. PNC is proud to sponsor Scott Dixon, driver of the number 9 car for Chip Ganassi Racing. Scott knows that the road to Victory Lane starts today. Copyright 2018, the PNC Financial Services Group Incorporated. All rights reserved. PNC Bank, National Association, member FDIC. Let's see. And Jerry also says, have you gotten a chance to meet any of the Yankees through the connection with your friend and team owner, George Steinbrenner?
I've met a few of the guys at spring training. I don't know if they made the roster for this year. But I haven't met any of, like, their big hitters. I haven't met Judge or Stanton, any of those guys.
And does that conflict with your inner sensibilities of, I'm guessing, growing up possibly a Dodgers or having an affinity for one of the Southern California teams? Because I know if my team owner was named Steinbrenner, yeah, that'd be nice to meet Yankees or whomever, but I grew up a San Francisco Giants fan, and that's not changing no matter who my team owner or sponsor is.
Yeah. Well, as you say that, I'm in my brother's room, and I'm looking at all his Los Angeles bobbleheads that he has. So, definitely the family, I think. We played Little League growing up, so I played Little League, and I was big into baseball when I was little. And yes, when I was little, I was a Dodgers fan.
What position?
But once I stopped, I think in my first few years, they probably stuck me out in the outfield because I was pretty useless picking grass and not really paying attention until I got to hit. But and then I played catcher for a little bit.
Really? I would have pegged you as a shortstop, second base, something kind of, you know, agile, darting back and forth. I wouldn't have thought of you as a catcher, but again, man, that's why I love these questions.
I could make the throw from home to second, which was the big thing that not a lot of kids could do.
Wow. Great point. Yeah. I played first base, left field, and was a pitcher on rare occasion, usually when whomever our actual pitcher was just blown up by the other team or otherwise. So, yeah, Little League was my primary thing for many years as a kid. Let's see. Let's jump around here to some more. Brian Cohn. Brian always sends in great questions. He says, how did your sister deal with your move to Europe and your success in motorsports? And he says, was there any of that famous family jealousy of, well, you got to race in Europe, so I better get a pony, or anything like that?
I don't know. I never thought about that, but yeah, it was a little bit unfair. She got college paid for, and I got a 2-year trip to Europe.
Well, maybe she could be your financial advisor, and, you know, she can take a big 50% whack out of all your future earnings. You know, you can pay her back for a little bit, balance things out in the future. You know, you have options.
Yeah. She doesn't mind it too much. I think she's super happy for the success that they have. And I'm starting to feel the repercussions of this thing, because now my parents made me pay for my car. Yeah, so only a few days until they're going to start making me pay for living at the house.
Yes. Oh, I remember. I think I was maybe 18, something like that. I'd been a junior mechanic for a year or two in the old SCCA Super V series, and was doing that while I was in high school. And then when I graduated high school, I remember my stepmother told me, well, you got two choices. You can either go to college and live here for free, or if you get a job, well, then you're going to start paying rent because you're earning money. And so I can tell you, I stayed in racing. I didn't go to college at that time, and I really did not like forking out a couple $100 a week to live in the home I grew up in. But, you know, if that's the biggest problem in the world you have, it's not a real problem. Okay. Yep. James Litticote, this is a early candidate for question of the week. Colton, if a James Bond, and he says pick your favorite actor, versus Jason Bourne death match happened, who wins and why?
I was a big fan of the Bourne movies, so I would have to say, I don't know though, because James Bond has all the resources.
Gadgets. Lots of gadgets.
I think they're pretty equal fighters, but I would have to go with James Bond just because he has the MI6 resources.
True. And, you know, if we're talking about Idris
and that's
Elba...
that's coming from a Bourne fan.
I know. My leaning here would be Bourne as well, but I'm thinking if Idris Elba is indeed cast as the next James Bond, I can't think of anything that his character as James Bond couldn't do to beat the living you-know-what out of good old Jason Bourne slash anything that he might bring. So let's see. Where else should we go from here? Luke Siters says, I've always wondered this. Colton, your father, and Michael Andretti have a wealth of oval knowledge. He says, since the car is so much different today from what they drove, can you find any of their experience or tips to be helpful? or is it sometimes difficult to apply whatever tips they might have in a very different modern car?
I guess the cars are different eras, but I think it still correlates. So, I mean, you still get the same sensation from the car. So I think, the advice is useful, and it's mostly just general advice. It's not, it's not super driver related, because that's something that you deal with your engineer and stuff. So yes, it's very useful, and even Mario gives great advice, and cars were way different when he was driving.
And this is a bit of a dumb or soft question, but I mean, I realize that you didn't necessarily grow up seeing Mario in his prime and maybe Michael in his prime, etc., but do you still have the ability, Colton, to appreciate that when you're sitting in the Andretti Hospitality, and whether it's just shooting the breeze with Mario or Michael or whomever, that these are folks that in our world, most people just look at them and think of them as gods. I mean, that must be pretty cool, having breakfast with Mario, just listening.
Mm-hmm. I'll tell you a good story after this, but so I do appreciate it. Michael, it's a bit different because, I grew up around him, and I was friends with his son, Luca, when I was growing up. So, I kind of see him more as like one of my friend's dads or one of my dad's friends, and so Mario, though, your jaw drops when he comes in, because he's like an American hero, and so for the story this year in America, we're sitting there, we're playing cornhole with Marco's team. They're having a barbecue, and Mario comes over, and he's just drinking a Bud Light and playing cornhole. And it's so weird to think that Mario's a normal person and he drinks Bud Light.
That is the best. That so needed to be live streamed, just so folks could understand that, this man, the greatest of all time, look, a Bud Light, cornhole, it's a good evening of fun here. Let's see. Scott Hodgins says, Marshall, you went to the season-ending Formula E event in New York and was wondering about impressions. Actually, Scott, I had to cancel that the day I was due to fly out. So despite, no joke, probably having received 5, maybe 6 invitations, both from the series and otherwise, to come and participate and watch and see what a Formula E race is like from the inside and out, I've yet to do that, so it's still something I have to do. How about you, Colton? I know you've obviously tested a Formula E car, but have you been to a full proper round and had a look at what they do, and if there are any things we might adopt an IndyCar that would improve the spectacle?
So I went to, when I did my test, it was in Morocco, Marrakesh, and it was the day after the race. So I was there for the race. I love that stuff. I think it's definitely the future. It's very profitable for the manufacturers, and it's just going to be getting more profitable for the manufacturers as years go on, because I believe everything's going towards electric energy and saving the world. So as much as I love the big V12 gas-guzzling engines, it looks to be like that's going to be the way of racing. Hybrid engines and stuff like that. So, but sorry, I didn't answer the question. What was the question again?
No, it was just what kind of takeaways do you think there might be in Formula E if IndyCar is just trying to think of ways to generally improve its offerings to fans? Were there any things that you saw in how the FIA Formula E series puts on its events, the spectacle, if you want to call it, that IndyCar might borrow from to improve what we do here?
So Formula E is a bit different because on race weekend, it's built in city centers, so you're not having race-specific fans. Of course, there's a few, but it's mostly just people. They're doing a lot of good for racing because I think they're getting more people into the sport because they're right in downtown areas, which I think that's a point that IndyCar could do too. Obviously, it's expensive and hard to find these areas, but they're right in the city centers and growing a fan base. But the problem that they have is there's not a lot to do once you get there. Obviously, there's a lot of on-track action because it's all in one day. But apart from that, you know, walking around, there's not much to do, or at least there wasn't in Morocco.
Well, pop-up taco stand sounds like something we could do and make a little bit of profit. I don't know if it'd improve the spectacle, but I'd be down with that. Let's see. David Zitterbart, our friend from Australia, who writes in weekly, says, "Hey, MP, with Fernando and McLaren coming to IndyCar full-time next season, obviously this is going to boost the international audience. How do you see IndyCar utilizing this to grow the sport?" We definitely think that is the direction things are headed, David, but we haven't had that confirmed yet. Again, stronger indicators in the last 24 hours that might be what we can look forward to, but still waiting to find out if indeed that's all going to be greenlit and such, at least from a public standpoint. I think if IndyCar does a really good job at announcing the fact that we are going to have who I regard as the greatest driver in the world, active driver in the world, participating in IndyCar, yeah, I think that can only help. If I'm thinking about attendance, David, I don't know if that does anything massive. If we think about how many Formula One fans there are in North America, we know that there are plenty, but it's not a crazy number. And I don't know if this means we're going to have an extra 1,000 people turn up to the average event at, you know, Mid-Ohio, Road America, etc. If it's 5,000, I don't think this is going to turn into a huge Fernando cheering section at every track we go to, but I could be completely wrong, and I hope I'm completely wrong. Where I would hope this benefits IndyCar the most is in coverage and getting the IndyCar message out to a much wider market than just North America. And so if this is the thing that helps IndyCar to grow even more in Europe, in Spain, France, Italy, etc., that is the thing that I hope would come from Fernando participating. I think the McLaren angle is something that, if it is indeed Fernando in a McLaren car, I think the McLaren angle actually gets buried a little bit, because his name certainly surpasses McLaren's just in terms of international recognition today. I do think this, Colton, would be a great thing if we look to the future, because one of the things IndyCar has needed is more people coming up, whether it's a European ladder, in Asia, in wherever, to look to IndyCar and the Mazda Road to Indy as a destination that they really need to aspire towards. We haven't had enough of that from an international standpoint in recent years. So Fernando coming over can be the thing to inspire more young drivers, young men and women throughout the world, outside of North America, to look at our open wheel series as a destination instead of automatically, I want to go to Formula One. That, to me, could be the best knock-on effect. What about you? What do you think impact and value of Fernando possibly being an IndyCar? How do you think that might play out?
It's tough to say. Obviously, it's going to have a positive impact, I believe. And I think you really, really hit the nail on the head there with your answer, because I do think it can bring kids over that idolize Fernando and they look at IndyCar as a destination now, which in turn can bring more money into American motorsport, which is always great. I think it'll be interesting, because I think a lot of people think that he's just going to blow all the drivers away. But I think he's definitely going to have a good run. I think a few guys like Will Power, Scott Dixon, Joseph Newgarden, Alexander Rossi, Ryan Hunter-Reay, they can mix it up with him.
Let's get on to about 10 more minutes of questions, and then we're going to let you finish up, get packed, and hop on a plane. Daniel Ferris, thank you for sending this question in. Colton, you and your dad are racing in the Indy 500 on the last lap. You are second. He is first. how aggressive are you in going for the win, and would you bump him for the win coming off of turn four?
Yeah, you have to.
Yes.
I like to think that maybe he would let me by, but I don't think that would happen. So if I had to, yes, I would take him out.
Oh, that is the best. And what is, how do you prepare for the post-race conversation? Because I'm not sure. How's this? If you slingshot your old man and take the win, I think he comes to victory lane, tears in his eyes, big hug, so happy for you. You offer him a sip of the milk. It's this just absolute hallmark postcard of a family moment. You feed your old man the chrome horn, spin him off of turn four, and take the win. I'm not sure he's coming down to victory lane, first of all, and if he is, you might need to get security. What do you think's going to go on here?
I don't think he's really that type of guy, but I don't know. I don't really remember when he was driving that much, so he might be a little crazy. I would like to think that he wouldn't do anything. I think he'd still be pretty happy, and he would understand that it had to be done.
You might be the first Indy 500 winner who was grounded immediately after winning the Indy 500, so that would be all kinds of awesome as well. I got a question here from Norm Nelson. He says, Marshall, I'm headed to the Portland race with my 7-year-old son. I haven't been to a race since the kart days. What are your recommendations of do's and don'ts with a boy in tow? And he also said, what's the best way to follow along during the race while you're there in person? Is it IndyCar's internet radio, pit radio, some other app? Help me, I'm not current. Norm, thanks for asking. And I'm so glad that you are returning from a long absence from IndyCar. I think you're going to enjoy the Portland race for sure. It's been more than 10 years since I was at Portland, so I'm having to go off of some a little bit distant memory, but it is very much a walking track, Norm, and so I would keep that in mind with your son, meaning there's some events where you buy a grandstand ticket, you sit there all day, and that's what you do. You can do that here. You can definitely buy, you know, go sit, and that might be something that you guys want to do, especially if your son gets a little tired or worn out. But just from a planning standpoint, it's a park. It's a racetrack within a park. It is genuinely beautiful. We've also heard that there's a fairly solid contingent of homeless folks who have come to make that park their new location. So I'm not saying that there's anything wrong with homeless folks or that they are bad, dangerous, or otherwise, but having heard from folks who were there for the Pirelli World Challenge Series race recently, that was something that definitely caught them off guard a little bit, and that's a change from when I was there last. So I would just say that it is a beautiful place to walk around and view the cars from a variety of corners, and I would think that might be something that you and your son enjoy. I don't know what the weather is going to be like, but an umbrella and or a little cart to tow along, some fold-out chairs and something, I would suggest planning it as basically a, think of it more like a hike with race cars than maybe just picking one spot and sitting there all day long. And I think that might be the way you enjoy most. As for listening along and whatnot, the IndyCar radio team does an excellent job, especially with the recent addition of Anders Krohn to the team this season. So that is something you can do through your phone and find that on, I believe, IndyCarRadio.com and also the IndyCar Timing and Scoring page 2. And if you're a Verizon user, I believe they have an app that will take care of you there as well. I'm not a Verizon user, so I've never used it, so I can't say. But I think those might be the best way to stay plugged in, and I don't know if and what you need to do in terms of paddock access, if that is something extra you have to pay for, but definitely just plan on walking and enjoying and seeing Indy cars flying down straights, sailing through corners, braking, you name it. That's one thing you can do at Portland that is easier to do there than maybe some other tracks. So all right, let's wind down and get a few more questions for you here, my man. And, ooh, here we go. Mark Johnson. He says, Mr. Colton Herta. I love the Mr. part. Mr. Colton Herta, if you could have any car number in the Indy 500, what would it be and why? And he says, thank you, and I hope your hand heals soon.
thank you. The hand is doing well. I'm hoping that it should be fully healed or 90% of the way at Gateway, which will be nice. I won't have to tape it up anymore. So yeah, I look forward to that. But I would run, if I could, I would run the number 98 to commemorate Dan Weldon. That's kind of what I do in my Indy Lights car right now, and that's what I would like to do. An Indy car. Obviously, it's going to be a bit difficult if I'm not in my dad's car, but you know, we'll see.
I think arm wrestling, you know, if Marco's in the car, got the 98, arm wrestle, something. We can come up with some sort of win or lose scenario. We're going to jump over to Twitter to close out our questions here. Don Davis says, Colton, your dad studied engineering at Ohio State while he was driving for Bobby Rahal's team. Do you plan to follow a similar student/racer path at any point in the future?
Not at this point, not at this time. Between the IMSA stuff and the Indy Lights stuff, I'm pretty full on time right now. It's difficult to do schooling and racing, especially at a college level, where it's tough to make up work. Whereas in high school, you can just get the work from a friend or stuff like that. But in college, it's a lot harder to make up your work. So that would be a tough thing. Obviously, I would love to have a college degree, but it's not in the cards right now.
Well, as someone who, quote, retired from racing at 30, I believe, I was 30 or 31, having been in it for 15 or 16 years straight and wanted to try and lead a normal life, and did indeed go to college, I should say, University of San Francisco at the age of 30-ish or 31. You have time, my man. There's no huge, huge rush, but I would recommend it. All right, last question or two here. DZ, this is a great one. He says, Colton, could you please describe the moment, and it might not have even been behind the wheel, when you knew that this, that racing, was the thing you wanted to do with your life? What was that moment?
It's tough to say my moment. I'll tell you, so when we're all young, we had my brother and my sister, we all had, you know, little electric cars that you drive around the street in. And when we were living at our other house, our older house, we had a long driveway, and my dad would push us down in these cars, and he would try and spin us out, and he'd try and push the rear end and make it slide. And we were maybe 3 or 4 years old, and I was the only one that corrected the car and stopped the slide. Mm. So I think that's when my dad knew. When I knew, I don't remember a specific point when I knew. I think because I was around it quite a bit when I was young, I always wanted to do it. So I can't remember a specific point, but for as long as I can remember, I've always wanted to do this.
Yeah, it kind of seems like this is just your path in life. All right, one or two more, and then we are done with this episode. Let's go to Travis Bender. He says, Colton, what is your race day routine, and do you have any superstitions?
I don't really have any superstitions. I do take some supplements and some stuff like that just to, help out my diet. I run on, like, a hard, high carb. Some people have, like, different diets, high-fat diets, high whatever diets, and I run on a high carbohydrate, high sugar diet. So I like to take honey before I get in the car, just a little bit of added natural sugar, and then I have, you know, my electrolyte drinks and my carbohydrate drinks that I have.
My wife has recently
pretty much it.
Turned me on to the little sugar, not sugar, honey packets, and big thumbs up on that one. Travis also says, MP, in your opinion, would it be a stretch to say that Dixie has already won this year's championship, or there's still a lot of guys out there realistically who can give him a challenge? Oh, not by any sense of the imagination, Travis, has Dixie locked up his fifth championship. He does have a okay points lead over Alexander Rossi and Joseph Newgarden. Power's a little bit further back, but we're going into the final four races of the year, Colton. The next two are ovals. As you well know, you could be in the middle of the perfect drive, clipped every apex, never made a mistake, and some jackwad in front of you spins, understeers into the wall, blows a tire, who knows, and you are taken out through no fault of your own. So I look at what's coming here for Dixie and say he's certainly in a great position, but Rossi is just on a heck of a tear right now. Newgarden just always seems to pull out amazing performances when they are needed most. And with the lack of predictability coming up at Pocono and at Gateway, even if Dixie is perfect, he could come out behind in the points through no fault of his own. So I would not be preparing any kind of victory gifts for Dixie in this championship yet, because you know, it's IndyCar, man. You cannot predict what is going to happen next. So I would say there is no comfort whatsoever on Scott's part there in terms of what he might or might not earn here in the next month. All right, let's go to our final question. We're going to give that to Tim Williams. He says, besides, I assume, your dad, did you cheer for or idolize any other drivers while growing up? And he also adds in, I was quite possibly the biggest Brian Herta fan out there. So I'm super excited to have Colton joining IndyCar, and he feels old. Anyone other than your dad? He said, you know, that's my guy. I'm supporting him, rooting for him.
Yeah, I think I always looked up to the Andretti Dream Team when it was my dad, Tony, Dario, and Dan. I always thought Ryan Hunter Ray was a great driver. He's great with advice. Probably those guys.
Well, hopefully, before too long, we learn that you're going to be a part of a dream team there, maybe even with Andretti. So hopefully you can start to build your own narrative along those lines, my man. I know you're heading off this weekend to VIR, some IMSA action there that you'll be in and around, and then before we know it, we'll be heading into the final Indy Lights races of the year, and we will know in what, 2 weeks, I should say, roughly 2 weeks or so, we will have a pretty good idea of who has taken home that $1 million Indy Lights advancement prize, and have a better feel for what your 2019 and Pato's 2019 and some others might look like. Colton, thanks so much for spending time with us here on The Week in IndyCar on the Marshall Pruitt Podcast, presented by Cooper Tires and supported by PNC Bank.